Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highways 164 and F, in the Ridgeview Corporate Park. We're also in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank building right across from Winkies, and we service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. You can visit ellenbecker.com for more details. My guest today is Phil Remmers, estate planning attorney with Kramer Moltoff. Phil, thanks for joining today.
You're welcome. I like doing this, and we've done this a few times before.
I know. I do always love having you as a guest on the show. I know you're really familiar with our firm here. We've partnered together on many, many clients to get their estate plan in order. As an estate planning attorney, obviously you excel at that. Today's topic is going to be something that we don't always talk about, which is the role of the trustee in an estate plan. So before I get too far ahead, I'd love to hear a bit more about your background. You can lead into what is estate planning that we're even talking about for our listeners.
Sure. I'm an estate planning attorney in Waukesha. I've been doing this for upwards of 25 years and actually working with Ellenbecker. I think this is the 20th year. So we've been doing this a lot together and we've done a lot of radio shows and podcasts and it's been a lot of fun. But most of the time, a lot of the times, we've talked about different things over the years, but a lot of times we talk about estate planning. And so this one, I think, is a little bit different take on that. Where we're going to talk about, hey, when we're executing these documents at the end, when somebody's passed away, what does that look like for when you are need to name your executor, your administrator, your trustee, or when somebody's named you, one of your parents has named you as that person? So it's a little bit different take on the same script.
You know, we get that question a lot in talking to clients when they're going through the estate planning process, when they wonder, yeah, how do they pick their person? What does that person need to know in advance? You know, what kind of a, well, I'll just use the word burden. What kind of a burden are they putting on someone? And so I'm really excited to have you kind of walk everyone through that to kind of show how not so burdensome it needs to be, what they really need to know.
For sure. So I think we can just jump into it if you like.
Yep. Sounds great.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, estate planning, just so we create some background to what we're going to talk about in the future. So there's a number of different estate planning documents. Most of us are familiar with a will, which is a document that says how you want the assets to be distributed when something happens to you. Generally, we don't like wills. We've talked about that on the show a number of times. And the reason for that is because wills have to go through probate. They have to go through a court procedure. But in any event, it really gets done the same way as a revocable trust. And that's the other document that we use. We use a revocable trust generally instead of a will. It does the same thing. It gets the assets where we want them to go, but it does it without probate, without going through a court procedure. So kind of the names that we are going to kind of use a lot today is going to be an executor. That would be an administrator under the will that kind of steps in after someone dies. Sometimes we'll call that a personal representative as well. A lot of times I'll just refer to it as an administrator, but under a trust, that administrator is called a trustee. So I'll sometimes use administrator, administrator, trustee, personal representative, executor. It's really kind of interchangeable. If we're using a will, it's executor, and we're doing that under the will. If it's a trust, we'll call it, you know, trustee.
Well, and that's good to know. We also get that question a lot. You know, people thinking they're saying maybe the wrong thing, or thinking they're saying the right thing and it's slightly off. But right, for this conversation, it's really who's going to take care of everything and administer all the pieces and parts.
Yeah, and we're going to lump it in and call it administrator. But a lot of times I'm just going to be talking about a trustee. But understand, it really works the same under a will, which you'd call a personal representative executor. The only difference is now we're talking about having to go through probate, having to go through a court procedure with that. Some other things that might come up, we also have healthcare powers of attorneys and financial powers of attorneys. Someone to make healthcare decisions if you're not able to make those decisions yourself, financial decisions if you cannot make those financial decisions yourself. Beneficiary designations is another one where it's a way sometimes to get assets where we want them to go without going through a will or without going through a trust. You can just name people directly on that. And again, sometimes there's benefits to doing that. Sometimes it just makes it, you know, more complicated. Things don't get done. Things don't get paid by the executor. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about a little bit, you know, about that then.
Okay.
So as we've been talking about, the trustee is really the trust administrator. It's the person that wraps up your affairs, kind of takes care of your business and make sure everything gets done when something happens to you. Now, what can that consist of? It can consist of a lot of things. It can be the person that is going to be selling your real estate, cleaning out your house, dividing up the assets, working with the financial, you know, advisors to get assets, you know, divided up. Maybe one of the tougher ones, right? We've talked about this before, is working on the personal property.
Right, right. And so I was just going to reflect on when you said the administrator is the one that's going to sell and clean out everything. And I can imagine all of those all of our listeners who know they've been named as an administrator, if they're feeling like they are solely responsible for that.
Right.
And maybe to make sure it gets done, but they can certainly delegate and bring in people to help.
No, and they're going to, you know, need to keep, you know, that in mind. But that's where people can step in and help that process. One of the documents you can prepare is a memorandum of personal property. We've talked about that before, mm-hmm. on how we want assets to be distributed to, you know, your family or the friends when something happens to you. So if they have a list to go from, it makes it very easy. Sometimes I get named as a executor or trustee, and then I go into the house and it's a little bit awkward. Okay, you have all of this. How do you get it divided up between the family?
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily go there. So, you know, we usually have a process, you know, there's a number of ways to do it, but, you know, kind of figure out what the family wants. If there's lists, that's nice. You know, then, you know, the other assets, you know, what can be sold at an estate sale?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably time for another discussion on that. Then what can go to charity? And frankly, just what goes into the dumpster? And so those are kind of the things. I mean, what goes to the people? You know, what goes to, you know, an estate sale? What goes to charity? And then what goes into the dumpster? And so if you have ideas on that, you know, you should give some information to your trustees, your administrator on that.
Yeah, give direction, give some lists and letters, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, who should we be talking about, you know, should be a trustee? And one thing that, you know, I guess I'd like to let know is it's not important that you have a really strong financial background. Sometimes people will say, well, you know what, should my kids even do this or should this person even do that? And I don't think it's that big a deal. I think with a little bit of help from a financial advisor, a little bit of help from an attorney, which I really do think, or an accountant, which I do think are really good ideas, you know, to get that, it's really a step-by-step process. And I think most people can do it as long as they're diligent and they'll stay after it. And so I don't think you have to have really, you know, be a great financial mind or anything like that. I do think it's a couple things that you do need. I mean, one of them is they need to be honest. They could be in charge of a lot of money. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if the person is just not going to be honest, if they're going to be taking things that they're not supposed to be, they probably have the power to do it. They don't have the right to do it, but they have the power to do it. But that can create, you know, own issues where they get removed, where, you know, there could be criminal action against them. So again, we don't want to put people in place. If we're having someone that has a, you know, an addiction and they might be prone to borrow, steal, you know, funds. We sure. probably wouldn't want to name them for those reasons. I think another attribute that's really important is that they have common sense. Because if they can just think through things, how do I get things done the right way? How can I do this the easiest way? As I said, I don't think it's difficult, but it needs to just kind of keep moving. And that kind of lends into my last one is kind of a sense of urgency. I mean, that's almost the biggest issue that we run into when we're helping families do this, where we can set it up. We have a couple hour meeting with them. We say, okay, here's everything that needs to get done. Here's the tax ID numbers. Here's kind of an action plan, a cheat sheet that they can kind of go step by step. And it really is easy for them. But sometimes we're a year into this and we're like, hey, where we're at. And they're like, oh, I just don't have the time to do it. Or I don't
right.
feel like doing this. Okay. And then it goes a year, it goes a year and a half, it goes to 2 years. Now we're starting to get phone calls, you know,
from the beneficiaries.
Yep.
Saying what's happening.
And we're getting it from attorneys, and now they're getting, you know, removed as the trustee and that sort of thing. So the people do have a sense of urgency. But otherwise, as long as they have, you know, common sense and they're honest, I think it really works really good.
Well, and if it drags on too long, right, things can change. There's other impacts that come up if things sit for a long time, too.
Well, for sure. The reason we like to kind of move fast on it is, one, I think most people would like to, you know, get the assets and out. But the longer it sits there, the longer you're having to do accountings, the longer,
right.
the more tax returns that, you know, that you have to do. It's just more complications. If we can get it done quickly and it's done, it's just less paperwork for everyone.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, let's take a short break and then we'll talk more about what does it mean to be a trustee when we come back.
That sounds great.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, wealth advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is estate planning attorney, Phil Remmers. He's with Kramer Malthoff in Waukesha. Phil, you've been taking us through some of the trustee, administrator, executor, personal representative, all the things, right? That all kind of mean the same thing. The person that takes care of business after you're gone. I think it was great you started talking through with us, like what kinds of qualities we should look for as when we figure out who to name. Somebody who's honest, who can be trusted. I would think strong organizational skills, right? So they can actually manage going through a checklist.
That definitely helps. I mean, the attorneys or the accountants can provide some of that, but if they've got it, even better.
Yeah, sure.
But again, I wouldn't necessarily say you have to pick someone that's absolutely strong, you know, in that, as long as they're willing to seek help, right?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point, right? Knowing when to call in some reserves and call in some experts.
And that's some of the common sense maybe we were talking about.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I love that. So so that's on some of the things to think about when you name your trustee. Other pieces of that before you jump into like, what does it mean beyond just the person that gets everything done?
Well, you know, I think, you know, what we kind of lead into here a little bit is, you know, who should be the trustee? I mean, we've kind of talked about what type of qualities that they have. I think the question we get a lot, you know, Heather, and you get a lot, I mean,
that's what
I meant by the we, is, you know, who should it be? Okay, should it be one of my children? Some people feel like maybe it should be another family member, or should it be, you know, a corporate trustee? And I don't know if, you know, you talk about your experience with corporate trustees at all, or?
I think that would be great to talk through because you're right. People usually want to go to their children. Not everyone has children. Not everyone has children that would make the best trustee. Maybe there's siblings, but we know our siblings are typically in our same age range. So if we think about something long term, right, are they the right fit too? So thinking of that from a corporate trustee being an option, I think sometimes that's just feels so foreign to people because you always hear about somebody taking care of their parents' stuff or taking care of a sibling's stuff. So why don't you talk about how does a corporate trustee look different?
Usually a corporate trustee, and so I think it kind of comes both ways. Some people don't even consider a corporate trustee, and other people are like, well, wouldn't it be better just to have a corporate trustee?
Right, we hear it both, too.
Even though they'll have, like, three great kids, so.
Right. You know, it takes the burden off. Well, again, talk about how burdensome it needs to be, but take some of that responsibility and that off of it. If there are, it helps sometimes to preserve relationships within those, the kids, too, if they're not having to, you know, double-check people, question one another, that right. kind of thing.
But yeah, what a corporate trustee is really a kind of a professional trustee. I mean, generally, it's a bank, not always. You know, so there are some independent trust companies, and I know you use some of those. But it's an organization, usually a fairly large, fairly well-funded organization, you know, that has professional, you know, sometimes attorneys or trust officers, people that do this kind of for a living. They kind of do what I do, but they kind of do it all the time. And
right.
they're always just dealing, you know, with the administration. And they know how to get, you know, things done. And so, you know, sometimes it's a really good option. And, you know, some people come to us and they're like, listen, I just don't have, you know, a good family member, no one that I can trust. And so that's a good option for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's issues within the family that there might be, you know, children or other family members that are fighting. And so you kind of want a neutral party to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be an all or nothing with a corporate trustee, too. Sometimes we'll break it up where you'll have one of the children act as this administrator after your death to wrap up the affairs and get mm-hmm. everything kind of taken care of. But then when the assets get split, let's just say that there was a child that had an addiction problem and you just didn't want to dump, you know, their inheritance on them, $500,000, $1 million, whatever that might be.
Right.
Sometimes a corporate trustee is a great option to kind of oversee that money for them. You don't necessarily want to put another family member, maybe especially a sibling in front of them, because that can create, you know, some tension in the family. But this is a way to have kind of an outside party, someone that does that, that they're kind of used to this, you know, get it set up. And so that, you know, that the money will be taken care of, those children will be taken care of the rest of their life then.
So then if you have a corporate trustee, I suppose in either of those types of situations, right, as the administrator person, as the longtime trustee over somebody else's assets or both, one thing I know that, you know, that there's a cost to that. Sometimes that can make people shy away from it. I think we need to always weigh out the benefit to that cost. When you talk about, you know, getting things done timely, when you talk about preserving some existing relationships. But what might something like that cost?
It kind of depends on what they're doing. Usually, I guess I see it's between 1% and 2% of the estate a lot of times.
Okay.
To do the initial administration. That would be after someone dies, to pay the bills, wrap up the affairs, get the house sold, kind of get everything done. But there is a range, you know, mm-hmm. out there. And so sometimes what people will do is they will name a child to do that or a family member to get that initial administration done. But then if they have a child that needs some extra care, maybe a special needs child or an addiction, you know, child, something like that, then what they'll do is they'll put it into the trust and then name a corporate trustee to do that. And so that may cost, depending on how much, you know, maybe a 0.5% every year. So
okay.
There's usually like a minimum, you know, might be around $5,000 a year minimum to do it. So, you know, these really don't really work for $100,000, but you get up to $500,000, $1 million.
Right.
You know, that's something that, you know, can definitely work. But then it's usually a percentage after
okay.
that. Then.
Great. Yeah.
So
now can a person, so a not corporate trustee, can an individual also be paid a fee?
They can definitely be paid a fee, and they certainly might be paid the same amount as, mm-hmm. you know, the corporate trustee. We'd hope that they'd maybe be a little bit less because the corporate trustee has, you know, internal functions for accounting and maybe some legal and that sort of thing that's kind
sure.
of incorporated. And so that the individual is still going to have to accumulate those. So, you know, you think there'd be a discount. But it's kind of all over the place. I mean, to try to give you a good feeling how that works, it just depends on the people. A lot of times people are like, hey, I'm not taking a fee out of my brother and sisters or my family
right.
members or my niece and nephews those times. And other times they do. Sometimes the brothers and sisters want them to do it. They're like, hey, they've been pulling the weight, you know,
right.
all these years.
Yeah, spent a lot of time on this and that freed up, you know, the other siblings not having to spend that time on it. And
that time's not always after death. Sometimes that's the 10 years preceding death where they did everything for mom
right.
or dad or,
right.
you know, the family member too. So it's kind of all over the place. Sometimes people take it. Sometimes the beneficiaries insist they take it. And other times, you know, they're kind of like, hey, my brother or sister or my family member don't appreciate it. I'm going to take it because, you know, I need to be compensated. This has been a burden, you know, on my family. So any which way kind of works.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's good insights.
But that's, you know, it's kind of a good feeling for whether you have an individual trustee or a corporate trustee. The corporate trustee can definitely add something. It's probably going to come at a little bit of a cost, but in the right circumstances, it really can be a great function. But as I was saying earlier, I don't think it's needed. Some people come to us and they say, hey, I got these three great kids, but I'm just afraid it's going to be too much work or they're not going to know what they do. Again, I think a little bit of help from a financial advisor, a little bit of help from an accountant or an attorney, we can kind of put them on the right track. Mm-hmm. Every estate's different, but when we, you know, if we just have a basic estate plan, a lot of times, you know, our office spends somewhere between, you know, maybe 15 to 25 hours, you know, after the death to help the administration. That's over like a 6-month period. So you can see it comes up to, you know, just a couple hours, you know, every month. And that's just to kind of keep, hey, here's the initial plan. Here, you know, if they run into a roadblock, here to get them off the roadblock. Maybe it's help doing, you know, a couple tax returns, depending on, you know, what accountants that they have. And then getting things, you know, wrapped up at the end. And we'll kind of talk about that.
Well, and I know as advisors here, you know, when we work with our clients and they transition, right? And we work closely with those, with the trustees and with the beneficiaries to make sure that things get done the right way. But, you know, it's also good. It's important that we have that point person and, you know, usually instructing them, like you've mentioned a few times, having some legal help on the outside just to do it in the right order is one of the biggest things.
And that's the biggest thing we see. You know, some people are like, yeah, I tried to do this on my own and this has been like the worst experience I've ever had. And they'll come to us and literally spend 1 hour. I'll map out everything that needs to get done there. So, and they're like, wow, it's that easy. And I'm like, yeah, it is when you know what you're doing. So
right,
I was like, buy a couple hours, get going on the right direction. And then I just don't think it's that hard.
Yeah, exactly. That's great.
So another thing to kind of consider is, you know, at times we get discussions about, hey, do I need a local trustee? You know, one of my kids is local, another one's, you know, out of state trustee. Anyone can, you know, do it just fine. It doesn't need to be someone. There does sometimes need to be someone that can accept service, but an attorney or accountant can sometimes do that, you know, in state. But I would always pick the person that you think is best to do it. I wouldn't be making, you know, the decision on whether they're local or not. Now, that might be a tiebreaker if they can't get back because they're in another country and that's not going to help. But if you're like, listen, you know, if I pass away, this child's definitely going to be there. You know, they're going to take a few days. They can accomplish a lot in that kind of week after. And then most of it they can do from far away then.
So. Okay. Yeah, that's reassuring too, because there are those decisions that every person is making, especially when they look around who's in their life. And like you said, kind of who floats to the top. And if everybody's equal, who gets kind of either gets the responsibility. Some might look at that as getting stuck with the responsibility and that kind of thing. So that'd be that. This will be a good time for a break. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about, again, you know, what it means to be a trustee.
That sounds great.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is Phil Remmers, estate planning attorney with Kramer Maltoff in Waukesha. So Phil, keep us going on this. We've been talking about estate planning and trustee administrator, talked through, you know, individuals, corporate, in-state, out-of-state, other things to consider. So what's next that you want to share with us?
Well, I think... you know, one other area of topic and doesn't always come up, but is kind of trustee liability, right? I mean, it is a big responsibility. It's an important responsibility. Maybe most importantly, it's what they, under the law, we call a fiduciary responsibility, which means it's kind of like a heightened level of honesty that you need to have. And so what that does is it also creates risks that if you don't do it right, or if you inadvertently do something wrong, you know, could you be sued, you know, by, you know, the beneficiaries, by your brothers or sisters or family members or those mm-hmm. sorts of things. So you should consider that, you know, before you take it. I mean, who are you dealing with? What risks are you taking on? You know, what type of emotional toll, I guess that's, you know, that they would have there. But kind of understand your beneficiaries, and then whether you should go and get some type of insurance for that, so that, you know, some type of like errors and omissions insurance, if you've done something wrong, it's, you know, something to kind of keep in mind. A lot of people don't do it. Most people don't feel like it's a necessity, but it's not always a bad idea. But again, you got to look at your family members and what you're dealing with.
And there, depending on the situation, right? If the estate is at a level where, you know, there could be, again, with higher scrutiny, maybe more of a chance of there to be a significant cost to a mistake. Right.
Right.
That might be where that, like, getting that additional insurance and that risk protection could make more sense than a more typical or a smaller estate. But like you said, it all depends on the situation.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so, again, you have to look at the beneficiaries, how difficult, how sue happy, you know,
how litigious they are.
Yeah, they are. and kind of go, you know, from there. So. So, you know, we've kind of finished the basics about, you know, what does a trustee look like? So let's talk a little bit about what, you know, what a trustee does and what do they need? And so what are some of the necessities, you know, that they should have? They're going to need kind of the underlying document, right? Whether that's the will or the trust or whatnot, they're going to need a copy of that. And so, you know, I know you deal with this kind of a lot, Heather. I mean, that, can they find it? And I think part of what you guys do is like the organizing for that, right?
Right. We make sure that clients, you know, have a roadmap that's easily accessible. Now, will it be the actual signed original estate plan sitting on a shelf in their office? Maybe. If it's not there, then your trustee and your family need to know where to get it. So making sure that they can get into the lockbox if you have it in a lockbox, or a safe deposit box at a bank if you're still doing that, that they can actually get in to get that.
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, we've dealt with this before with, you know, lockboxes or safe deposit boxes at banks. You know, banks a lot of times will not allow them you know, in unless you've actually gone to the bank and they've been signed in. It's not just enough that they've been named as a trustee. So it isn't very important if you mm-hmm. are going to have a safe deposit box to have your that executor have access to it, which means they go to the bank ahead of time, they sign you know, the documents ahead of time. You know, I think our way, the way we've kind of done it, Heather, right, you know, over the years, is we give them a couple of copies so that they can just let that hang out around the house and they have easy access to it. But then we give them the originals and tell them to put it into a safe at home, a file cabinet at home, someplace where they're just going to leave it and we know it's always going to be there. And then we tell them, hey, don't break into these documents, even if you need to make copies. Make copies out of the copy booklet or come back to us and we'll make copies of you so that those originals are clean, they're ready to go, they're all together and we can find them.
Exactly. And that finding them, making sure you know where they are, especially if you move, right? Like, the amount of people that are like, I think it's in a box. I'm pretty sure I could find it if I need to. Well, no, you need to find it and you need to make sure that somebody knows where it is.
Yeah. And that just doesn't include the original documents, right? People do amendments over time.
Right.
We want to be able to find that. It doesn't really help if we got, well, here's the original document. I think there was an amendment, but that didn't get put with the originals and it gets spread out. So that mm-hmm. makes difficulty. So, you know, what you can do if you've been named as the executor trustee is kind of demand that of the people that want you to do it. Or if, you know, if you're asking someone to do that, you know, be organized, put these, you know, together so that it's available, you know, for them. You can also leave, and I know this is part of your organizer, kind of like the trustee contact information, kind of a, what do you call it, a grab-and-go binder?
Yeah, we put together a grab-and-go binder for our clients. It extends beyond just the estate planning side of it. It would include, you know, like an inventory of your accounts, any insurance policies. You can think of it as, again, that roadmap. It's not going to be your file cabinet. It's not going to be kept in your safe because you want it to be accessible. But yeah, thinking that through, like sometimes people put their passwords in there if they think that's something that someone's going to need someday to help them out, you know, maybe while they're still alive. That's important. Tax return, you know, kind of some of the tax strategies that have been employed. That's important. I know your estate plans always come with a flow chart, like a one page, easy to understand flow chart of who's going to be in charge and how is this flow and where do things go. A copy of that flow chart is a great thing for your grab and go binder. It's not just for if you are no longer there, it's for, you know, when you need to find something quick. You know, our kids are still on our tax return. So my copy of my tax return in my grab and go binder is the place I can find their social security numbers. Not going to lie. That's what I use my grab and go binder for. Yeah. But, you know, I'm still in and out of that thing all the time then.
No. So, you know, that makes it, you know, convenient. So what you want to do is, you know, have something together so that your administrator, your trustee can find this information. They can find it relatively easily and they can kind of start, you know, this process. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned is, you know, really one of the first things that they're going to need to do after being appointed after death is they really need to kind of gather up all the assets. And what we call that is the inventory process. And I know, like you were saying, a lot of times it's not a bad idea to have an accounting or an inventory kind of done every year of yourself. And that's something that you can leave for your administrator to make that easy for them.
Right, because bank accounts change. You might move your assets places. You can imagine when someone's going through your file cabinet and they find old statements, they're not sure if that account still exists or not.
Right. Mm-hmm. So again, if you can make that easy, I think it's a good time to do it at tax time. You're kind of putting everything together, just kind of jot down a new kind of inventory list, what you have, where they are. It doesn't have to be pretty, but if it's just a good roadmap, that's going to happen. But that's always going to be our first kind of step. You know, when people come in to visit us, you know, after there's a death, I always say, hey, bring in all that you can. That's easy. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's how we take it step by step. People will ask me all the time. They're like, well, Phil, just tell me what we need to do. And I'm like, I don't know what you need to do. You tell me what you have.
Right.
Then we will discuss what you want to have done. And then we go from there. So usually what they'll do is they'll come in and maybe they'll say, okay, mom or dad, or, you know, my aunt and uncle had a house. And I'm like, okay, so what are we going to do with this house? Is that something that somebody in the family wants it? We're going to figure out how to get it down to them. Is somebody going to take that as part of their inheritance? Are we just going to sell it on the open market? Are we going to have a real estate broker help us? Are we going to do this on our own? How's that, you know, that looking? And we kind of answer those questions, not hard questions. You know, it's just kind of, you know, systematic. And then based on, you know, the questions, then we have a roadmap on what we're going to do, you know, for that house. So now we go to the next asset, right? We go to, okay, there's some life insurance. Okay, we need to apply for that. Let's do that. When the money comes in, it's going to go into this particular bank account. Here's how we're going to use it. Here's how we're going to get it out. And we do that. You know, then we go bank accounts and we go brokerage accounts and we just take it step by step. And it's what seems so like a lot of work, a little bit daunting at the beginning. When you break it down and you're like, okay, we have 10 things and we kind of talk through, you know, each one. All of a sudden, we get to the end of that hour and we've talked about those 10 items. Now we've got a roadmap.
Okay? Right.
And that's where like the attorney, the accountant, the financial planners can help you with that roadmap. Because then what we do is we write it down and we say, okay, we're going to go get you a tax ID number, which is something that you're going to need. You can't use the parents, the decedent's social security number anymore. The financial institutions are going to require that you get a new tax ID number. It needs it to open up new accounts and checking accounts to pay, you know, bills. You're going to need it for the tax return. So that's something that's, you know, going to need to be acquired. And then, you know, what you do is you just take that step where you get the inventory of the assets, you determine what you want to do, and then you determine where, you know, they need to go. So
I think that tax ID number is it is so important and it is easy to not do right. And it's also a step that I don't think people even realize needs to be done because everything has a tax ID number on it already. Like you said, it's just your social security number, but that ends when you end.
And we run into that all the time, right? We know that the financial institutions are just not able to, you know, transfer it into a new account. I mean, before they sell securities, before they do any of that, they need to get the new tax ID number. We haven't talked about it, but one thing that does happen at death is there's a step up in basis. We've talked about that, on the show, where kind of a lot of the gains on capital assets get wiped away. And so again, that's a process that needs to, go through that, you work with a financial advisor, you get, those accounts separated out, you get them into the new buckets, you make sure that those gains are kind of wiped away and everything gets stepped up. And I know you go through that a lot when we're doing administration. So.
Oh, for sure. Right. We are really, walking clients through all of that, walking that trustee or administrator through all of those different steps.
Right. But, we get those down on kind of the action plan. And once we've, done that, the people usually will spend the next, 2 to 6 months. Maybe it's a really, really difficult one, 9 months or a year, but we try to get these done quick. People, we'll tell people all the time, hey, we think we can have this one done in 4 months, 5 months. And then they're like, wow, I thought this was going to be a year, year and a half. It's just not. As long as you're willing to do, if your administrator, your trustee's willing to kind of keep things moving, it can get done quickly. Usually the two things that take the longest for most people are going to be cleaning out the house, getting the house, sold. There's more difficult ones, obviously, people that have multiple apartment buildings, multiple businesses, those things are going to take more time. But for the rest of us, that's the process then.
Right. Well, we'll take a short break. And when we come back, we'll kind of wrap up the conversation with some of the other things to keep in mind, other things to know that will be on your plate, a consumable plate when you're a trustee. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Heather Deaton, Wealth Advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group. And my guest today is Phil Remmers, estate planning attorney. And we've been talking all about what it means to be a trustee, how to pick the person, what the person needs to expect, how to engage professionals, what the trustee actually literally has to do. So as we've walked through this kind of life cycle of life cycle of an estate plan, how does that all wrap up? So I've sold the house. I've got all of the accounts separated to the beneficiaries. Now what?
Yeah. And so we're a little detailed when we get into that as well. I mean, what we do is, again, we have this plan. We've kind of been working through this plan over these few months. Sometimes we'll do partial distributions. If it's going to take a little bit of longer or there's a lot of money out there, a lot of times we'll make a partial distribution. So if there's $2 million there, maybe we'll just hold a couple $100,000 back to kind of do taxes, wrap up the estate, that sort of thing, and then get out the rest of the money. But most of the time it just gets, distributed all at once, at the end, as long as we can do that quick. But what's important to do is that you really should give information to the beneficiaries. You want to make sure that, that the trustee is protected. It's fair that the beneficiaries know what's going on. So they've been kind of in the background throughout this entire process. What we do, what we advise the trustees to do is to do an accounting. A lot of trusts, certainly the court system, if you're doing a will, is going to require that be done. But what you do is you give an accounting. So you kind of take that initial inventory that we talked about, which was, okay, here's what we started to here. Here were all the assets when the person died. Now what's happened? Give them that accounting, that history that happened. What expenses were paid? What growth occurred? What distributions got done? What got sold for what? And kind of show kind of that life cycle as of the estate administrations as you described it. And so then we get to the end of that, and then what you do is you put that all together, kind of in a nice form, and you give that to all of the beneficiaries. And that's nice for them to have. Then that they know that you've done everything that you were supposed to do, that you've shown your hand, that you did do everything, that you were honest about it. But then what we normally do then is ask that we give them that accounting, and we give that to them before we make distributions.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we do is we ask the beneficiaries to sign a receipt and release. That one, that they've, that they're going to receive this amount of money. So we have the accounting, It lists everything that's happened, and here's our proposed distribution of all of the assets. And so this person's going to get this, this person's going to get this, you know, so on and so forth. And then each person kind of signs off that, yes, they are in agreement with everything that's been done and that they're in agreement with what assets, you know, they are going to receive. And so we don't make distributions until that is done, that everybody signed off on it. Sometimes we'll get people that says, well, I don't want to sign off it. I don't have to sign off on it. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. We can do that. Then what I typically do is say to them, what we should do is go to court and we'll have the court sign off on it. Because in the end, we want to make sure that the trustee, that administrator is protected, that people can't come back and sue later on, because it gets difficult after years to kind of put together that information again. So before they get their money, we have them sign off on it, that one, that they, yes, they agree that they're going to receive this amount of money, that they do give a release to say that they won't sue the trustee. Mm-hmm. And then we typically also have them sign an indemnity agreement. And what the indemnity says is that if anything comes back later, because again, we could hold this open for a lot longer, another 6 months or a year, because we don't know that tax issues won't come up later. We don't know that there won't be a lawsuit, you know, that comes up later. Now, we typically are pretty sure we don't, else we're not going to make this distribution. But just in case it does, that we have some recourse, that we can go back to the beneficiaries, the people that got money, and say, hey, we need to have you throw a little bit back into the estate to do that. I've never had to do that, you know, over the last 25 years or so. It would be a little awkward to do so. But again, we think that's, you know, a good idea to do that. But again, if they're not going to do that, then what we usually do is have them do a final. We go to court and then we have that done. And that, again, that just adds more time, that adds more money, adds more attorney fees.
Yeah.
But it's worth it in the right circumstances to make sure, especially if somebody won't sign it, usually it sometimes means they're problematic. And that's exactly where we want to get the protection. So we go to court.
I think that that's interesting too, that indemnity part of it, because, you know, we have worked with clients, pretty straightforward, small situation. And, you know, to have that conversation with your siblings about, you know, I'm distributing this right now, and there might be a follow-up bill coming in from something, and I might need you to send some money back. Without that conversation, it's really hard to have that conversation later. Right? So if people choose to do this in a slightly different order, it's the communication that is, you know, really important. Like, you're talking about very formalized things, and I think that's amazing and wonderful. And there's going to be situations that it could even be fulfilled less formal.
Right. It just keeps things moving. And really, a lot of times from our perspective, we want to do it right, but we do want to protect the trustee. And it's not just that we want to protect the trustee that they're doing it right, but that if somebody's going to become unreasonable later on, we want to figure that out ahead of time. Because after they have the money, now they've got the money to go hire attorneys and sue and to do, you know, those types of things. So once we get all the receipt and releases back, once that happens, then and then only then do we make, you know, we do the final tax returns and we'll get that done. Most of the time, the income from these estates get pushed out at the end to the beneficiaries, so that the estate doesn't need to worry about paying the extra taxes on the tax return they file. That will get pushed out to the beneficiaries. And again, we notify them that, hey, listen, there was $50,000 worth of, you know, income. Mm-hmm. There's two of you. You're going to need to pick up $25,000 on your income tax return. Be prepared that even though we're giving you $500,000 now, you may need to put $10,000 aside or whatever, you know, for taxes, you know, later on. And then we go ahead, you know, and make those, you know, distributions then.
Yeah, and that final part of it too, you know, there's really valid reasons and great reasons and great situations where income gets pushed out to beneficiaries. And so I also want to take this time, like, don't be surprised. You're going to net out more than the taxes are, and you would net out more from your portion and paying your own tax on it than if that estate had to pay the tax on it. So, you know, in the long run, it's a better choice that administrator did. So, well, Phil, this has been great. I really appreciate this. I think it's a lens that we haven't done on the show before. And I'm just glad to have you walk us through that, so everybody knows kind of what is the What are the responsibilities? How easy can it be? Maybe where could there be a hiccup or two, and how to protect yourself in that? So if our listeners wanted to know more about you or about the work that you do, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, they can do an email, but I a lot of times prefer just to talk to people in person. But my email is pjr@cmlawgroup.com. I'm with Kramer Multoff Attorneys, and our number is 262-542-4278.
Thank you again so much, Phil. And, you know, Money Sense airs Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you've enjoyed today's show and you want to learn more about EIG and any of our amazing upcoming events, you can visit ellenbecker.com, or you can call us at our office at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. And remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.